somewhat about this morning in the context of Jim's presentation on National Standard 2, but partially as a result of a national review of the science centers that was conducted by Dr. Sissonweiner and Rothschild about 4 years ago, the Science Board made a decision to establish a calendar of program reviews at each of the science centers. And the idea was that we would select a topic each year and that topic would be the focus of a review at each of the six science centers. So the first of those reviews took place this year. Next year, the topic will be stock assessment methods and process. The year after, I believe, it will be the focus will be on protected resource science. And then after that, we have about three more topics, and we'll conduct, we'll cycle through this set of topics on a however many years it takes, a 5 or 6 year basis. So let me tell you a little bit about how we set this up and about the findings. The review was conducted in August. As a result of the review, of course, we had reports written by each of the panelists and the chair. And then, with the assistance of staff, I wrote a memo responding to the findings and making some commitments on things that we would do to follow up. We've just posted both the report from the panelists and my response on the center's website, and I'll provide Tom with the URL for that so that at your leisure you can go in and read more about this. And that is because we've only just posted this, I don't have a PowerPoint presentation. I'll give you a little bit of background, as I said, and then I'll speak to each of the seven larger areas that were identified by the panel and share with you our response. And what I think I'll do is I'll pause after I've discussed each of the seven topics with you to see if there are any questions that I can follow up on. So we had a panel of six experts on different aspects of fisheries data from different parts of the world and the nation, from Europe, from Canada, and from elsewhere in the United States. And a couple of general statements. The first is that the panel was uniformly positive in its responses with regards to our fishery-independent data collection capabilities, particularly the bottom trawl ecosystem surveys. And that was very good to hear, given the concerns that have been expressed more broadly in the community about those surveys and given the importance of those surveys in providing essential time series of information for groundfish assessments throughout the region. The review is also focused on one area which was a little bit outside the terms of reference for this particular review, but I think it's one that is nevertheless germane in a broader sense, and it's something, again, that's come up frequently in exchanges with the Council over the workload and demands that are placed on our stock assessment scientists and the need for us to somehow provide more opportunity for them to engage in science as well as in carrying out stock assessments so that they develop as scientists and so that the quality of the stock assessments which we bring forward improves as a result of that. That's an ongoing challenge for us, but it's certainly one that became evident to the reviewers when we talked about the schedule that we follow with regards to delivering stock assessments. So the first issue, and these are in no particular order, was a recommendation related to to fishery-dependent data, apply a probability-based sampling approach to fishery-dependent monitoring, particularly port sampling of commercial landings, and use a unique trip identifier to better link vessel trip data to catch data. The probability-based sampling recommendation came from somebody who's very familiar with sampling both of commercial fisheries and recreational fisheries. And he is particularly enthusiastic about the changes that were made in the U.S. with our recreational sampling program over the last 2 or 3 years, and sees the statistical benefit and therefore the potential for improving the way that we sample commercial fisheries to bring better statistical methods and better confidence in the results of that sampling. It turns out that that's quite a difficult approach to implement, given the complexities and the logistics associated with fishery monitoring. But we at the center actually do believe that it's important to pursue this. And we're working with the regional office as we speak on a very comprehensive review of all of the data collections that support, or the fishery-dependent data collections that support assessment. And so as we address some of the shortcomings in that system, then we do intend to move forward and develop a plan at least to look at how we might bring probability-based sampling to the fishery-dependent monitoring and what the cost might be and what the benefits might also be. The question about a unique trip-specific identifier, that actually is a very complex issue, although it sounds simple. Because of the different types of data that are collected by the center and the region to monitor the performance of fisheries and to document catch and bycatch, discard, and because many of the elements of that system have been developed independently over time, they do not link well. And what that means is that Ostdoc assessment scientists have to spend an enormous amount of time reviewing and rationalizing the data and solving problems associated with disconnects between inconsistent data collections and information systems. Again, this is something that we recognize is a very serious problem, and we, together with the regional office, are working on resolving. We expect it'll take some time to do this because what we really want to do is develop a brand new fishery-dependent information system, which is flexible enough to support the needs of the agency and the councils well into this century. What we're dealing with now is a system that's been tweaked and tuned to support incremental needs over probably two decades, and that's one of the reasons why it's so difficult to work with. And I think we've seen some examples at the meeting today of the difficulties that we have in extracting information to support the council's needs and our own needs. So we recognize that this is something that really does need attention. I'll pause for a second, Mr. Chairman, to see if there are any questions on this one.
Questions for Bill? David.
Yeah, Bill, regarding the probability-based sampling approaches, obviously this is an approach that would be considered nationally, not just here in your center, but elsewhere. Do you feel that this particular recommendation, this sort of sampling approach, will be challenging for the Northeast region, specific to the groundfish fishery, due to the way in which we have a fishery prosecuted now, that is individual sectors, you know, doing their own thing? Will that pose a problem regarding how you're going to set up your sampling scheme?
Dr. Pierce, yeah, I think it will. I think that every region has some particular complexities. And I think while in general we might see a national recommendation to pursue this, we're going to have to look at regional specific plans. It's hard for me to see how we could design something that was really generic and flexible enough to work on a national basis, as with the recreational fisheries system.
Ellen.
Okay, here's a stupid question. Could you really quickly define what a probability-based sampling is, how it differs from what we're doing now?
It's not a stupid question at all, but what it really means is to bring statistical rigor to the process of sampling commercial catches. As it is now, it tends to be much more ad hoc, and one of the reasons for that is just the logistical challenges of having the right people in the right place at the right time to sample.
Other questions for Bill? Seeing none.
Thank you. This next one actually complements, I think, the comments that Dr. Sissonwine made this morning about management strategy evaluation. The recommendation is develop and apply management strategy evaluation techniques to evaluate possible changes in sampling and data management and examine sensitivities to stock assessment related to these. The panel recommended an MSE approach for addressing a range of problems that are not amenable to conventional analytical solutions. And I personally believe that MSEs are very powerful tools to help us look at how changes in sampling strategies can affect the outcomes of the assessments that we use. In fact, we've had some discussions within the center about how we can bring the MSE idea to bear for addressing a range of questions that we have. And what we're going to do here is actually establish an internal MSE working group, which will be implemented probably mid or in the second half of the upcoming calendar year. And at the same time, we've set up a working group to begin to prioritize survey and sampling requirements because we have some short-term needs to begin to look at what some of the trade-offs are. But ultimately, I think as we begin to use MSE in almost a routine way, it is really going to help us to deal with some of these trade-offs of resources versus the quality of information that's necessary to support stock assessments and some of the other information needs that we support. So I'll pause again, I think.
Questions for Bill? Ellen?
Again, Bill, could you explain MSE?
Yes. Management strategy evaluation actually has a number of different meanings, I think. In this context, it's really a way of, if you will, simulating the whole process so that you can run through different scenarios under different sampling strategies, if you will, and map what the effects of those are, in this case, on the outcome of a stock assessment. But the general approach is applicable to a whole suite of sampling and estimation problems.
Could I follow? Okay, thank you. That tells me a little bit about what it is. And what's running through my head right now is that these are major changes. And I think that in the past, when we've changed our way of doing data collection, that a lot of times it has come down to, at the very end, public comment. Not that we would necessarily have comment on all of the data collection changes, but I think that it would be really valuable, and I would hope that the Science Center would consider at different intervals when you're looking at the options that you may be using to ground truth some of these ideas with industry to see if they're looking at things in a different way, practicality-wise, and to see if there might be some possible problems that you and the scientists may not see that the industry, that would be apparent to us as industry people. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Gethel, I think I do, but correct me if I'm wrong. I think, first of all, we can learn a lot from the ideas that the industry has. And in the context of the fishery-dependent data, what we're looking to do is improve the system that's important to all of us, to support the science, to support the management, to support industry in its tracking of its own performance. And we have a two-stage process which we've engaged in initially with the regional office. One is to look at how we can make some short-term changes in the existing systems just to improve throughput and efficiency. But the bigger issue is how do we design a 21st century fishery-dependent information system? And that is something that we absolutely have to engage with the industry with for a number of reasons, and where I think the industry's perspective is going to help us build a better system.
Tom.
Dr. Karp, I'm a little confused here as to exactly what you mean by an MSC working group taking place down at the center. You know, that the limited reading I've done on management strategy evaluation indicates that it's really an overall process and needs involvement and buy-in of not just the scientists, but the industry and the managers involved in the development. And so it's not clear to me if you're talking about embarking on that type of program to try and revise how we set catch advice consistent with our change in priorities yesterday, or if you're talking about something at a much narrower focus, which is just trying to somehow use some elements of MSC to better design your sampling programs. And if it's the former, I guess my question is, are you anticipating involvement from the council and the council staff and the industry, and how you would envision that happening?
Tom, I think that it's an important question, and I think it is, it's one of scale. I think the concept of MSE in its broadest definition is as you described. And I think ultimately we would like to bring that kind of thinking forward and engage with the NRCC and ultimately with the council on how we might be able to use that kind of an approach to improving the whole assessment process. In the shorter term, we would bring a narrower definition. And when I talked about setting up a working group at the center, the idea there is to begin to develop the capacity for doing these kinds of analyses, and initially to approach some of the narrower analyses, and from that build the capability and the capacity to take on some of the broader challenges.
Other Mike.
Yeah, I think the response that that Dr. Karp just gave is right on. I mean, there needs to be within the agency the development and nurturing of capacity. But ultimately, Tom is also correct that if one is actually going to evaluate management strategies, then the management strategies have to come from the management body. So I think those things can work hand in hand. One of the purposes of having the same subject for peer review in all centers in the same year was that some of the ideas that come forward would probably be cut across centers and be amenable to really economies of scale or improvements in your ability to tackle them at a national level. And so your identification of a management strategy evaluation team actually just leads into something that I think has been needed for quite some time, is a national perspective on developing the tools and broad consensus on how and when to apply management strategy evaluation. So I think it's great that the center's pursuing it internally, but I think it'll even be better if, in fact, as a result of this series of reviews, that some greater commitment and capability emerges at the national level. As you're well aware from your previous job, some of the best experts in the world in this particular area happen to sit in your old center in Alaska, so I'd love to see them engaged in helping in some issues here and vice versa.
I agree entirely, and in fact the Science Board, which is really the committee of the Science Center directors and the chief scientist, will next meet in January in Washington. And one of the items on the agenda is to distill what we can collectively from these reviews, and the idea of a national perspective on developing MSE capacity has already been put on the agenda. So you're right on the mark, Mike.
Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Karp, you know, we've heard a lot about the management strategy evaluation technique over the last couple of years, I guess, and I think the comments from Tom about involving the industry and helping the industry understand the techniques and what the trade-offs are, what the information is that goes into these evaluations will be helpful. But I'm trying to identify Dr. John DeRoba's work around the herring assessment. I think that was done before you were at the center. But I think John used management strategy evaluation techniques to tease out the robust natural mortality and predation estimates that are in that assessment, if I'm not mistaken. I think he's a pretty interesting guy, and I guess my question is, was that a management strategy evaluation technique? It's a hard question for you. You weren't here at the time, but I think it was, and it was pretty well done, actually. The trade-offs that he ran through the model to come up with the idea that the model was hungry for fish and the natural mortality predation demand seemed to be addressed with the model outcome. So, was that an MSE evaluation?
Mr. Galen, I don't think that it was technically, although I think it had many of the elements that might be considered as part of an MSE. But I agree that John DeRober is a very talented analyst and is bringing a lot of original thinking. So he'd be a very good candidate to begin to help build some of this capacity. Another place where there's capacity that we've been able to take advantage of already, and I hope we will in the future, is with Dr. Butterworth. You know, he comes from time to time to visit us on behalf of industry clients relative to some of our stock assessments, and he has a lot of expertise in MSE. And about a year ago, when he was at the center, I asked him to stay on for a day and hold an MSE workshop, which was very informative.
Are there any other questions on this segment? Carry on.
Thank you. Back to surveys. This is issue 3. Better integrate center and state fishery independent surveys to improve comparability and therefore the utility of state surveys in developing stock assessments. The panel, I think, found it very interesting that there were numerous state surveys that provide information in support of the different stock assessments. And while on the one hand they thought that it was very useful and informative to have all of these different sources of information, and they understood the benefits of the improved spatial and temporal coverage, they also had some questions about potential redundancy in all of the different surveys which bring information to the stock assessments. This is actually a really complex issue because all of these surveys are multi-species, and so trying to look at incrementally the extent to which any particular survey improves any particular stock assessment is maybe only of limited value. But what we have decided to do is add a term of reference to all of our benchmark stock assessments beginning in FY15 to look at, evaluate the utility of state surveys in all cases where the data from these surveys are available. So I don't think a huge amount of effort is necessary here other than to recognize the value of these surveys and perhaps to look more analytically at what they bring. And I think through this term of reference we might be able to provide some better feedback which might result in some improvements in overall efficiency of our collective survey efforts. That's that one.
David.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Bill. That's useful. I'm glad that state surveys were looked at. And I would emphasize that as part of your ongoing work and your continued work on this particular issue, it needs to be thought given to, if it already hasn't been dealt with, but I suspect not, more thought being given to that the state surveys tend to have more stations per square nautical mile, you know, where we have more coverage, more aerial coverage than the federal surveys. Federal surveys having to cover a lot more geographic territory than state surveys. So that's an important issue that needs to be dealt with, more stations per square nautical mile. Plus, state surveys may be in a better position for many species to provide better indices of abundance of juvenile fish, especially if the juvenile fish of particular stock is found inside state waters. So it's more coastal than offshore. So I wanted to make those two points. In addition, in the context of that work you just described, how does NEMAP fit in? NEMAP is not a state survey per se, but it is in state waters principally and The service is relying, certainly here in the Northeast region, relying very heavily on NEMAP for future work, current and future work, since the Bigelow can't do what the Albatross used to do in terms of the sampling strata. The Bigelow has limitations. So how does NEMAP fit into this picture?
Thank you, Dr. Pierce. I think for the state surveys and the NEMAP survey, the recognition that those surveys are filling gaps which we cannot fill with the Bigelow, I think was very well taken. The importance of knowing more about incoming air classes from tracking relative abundance of juveniles in coastal areas is particularly important there. I think this greater density of sampling is also something that we do need to pay attention to. I'm not sure that NEMAP is actually identified, I think, in one of the later recommendations relative to cooperative research, because it's defined as a cooperative research exercise. But certainly, it's a smaller scale survey, and so it maybe fits better into the same category as the state surveys from that point of view.
Are there any other questions? Seeing none, on to the next segment, please.
Issue 4, develop and make better use of pelagic and benthic survey methods. So here we talk to the reviewers about what we call now the integrated pelagic survey, which is really ecosystem monitoring cruise series, which takes place on a quarterly basis, and is an enhancement of what we have called the Ecomon surveys. And these surveys provide data on plankton, pelagic fish, invertebrates, and also marine mammals, seabirds, and sea turtles, as well as environmental and oceanographic data. And, of course, this data is valuable for stock assessments, even in the fairly narrow context in which we conduct stock assessments now, and is becoming increasingly important as we try to bring more of an ecosystem perspective to the stock assessments that we do. So we received a lot of encouragement to continue with that effort. There was also some specific discussion on the Atlantic Herring Hydroacoustic Survey, and this is one which is a relatively recent time series. It's designed specifically to address, as one might expect, improved information, or to provide improved information for herring assessment. We've actually taken a hiatus from that survey for a year to look analytically and fine detail at how the survey is designed, and to see if we can improve the survey relative to its ability to support the stock assessment. But one of the aspects of the discussion that developed here was the importance of acoustics, both in the integrated pelagic survey and in this herring survey, and the need for us to invest better in improving our acoustic capabilities, both for surveying and assessing fish stocks and collecting information on other trophic levels within the ecosystems. We have very good scientists who can work in this area, and we have the technology, and this is an area, I think, in which we need to invest more to develop broader capabilities. The HabCam technology also came up in this context, not just because of its power and its value in sea scallop surveys, but because of the additional information it can collect on the distribution and abundance of demersal organisms. We've begun to do some work surveying the benthos more broadly using HabCam, and the panel was very interested in that approach and encouraged us to continue to expand that capacity to the extent possible. It's a very expensive technology to use, so it's difficult to find the resources to expand its use, but it's certainly very powerful, and I hope that we will be able to bring more resources forward in that regard.
Questions? David?
Yeah, Bill, you mentioned hydroacoustics, surveys for the pelagic species such as sea herring and the usefulness of that. Was there any discussion about the use of hydroacoustics for other stocks of fish such as codfish?
Dr. Piz, yes, but not in a great deal of depth. Acoustics is used for assessing codfish in some other parts of the world, in Europe. Cod and haddock surveys in Norway, in Iceland, elsewhere. And we've been looking for some time at how to tease useful quantitative data from the hydroacoustic data that is collected simultaneously with the bottom trawl surveys. That work's ongoing, and I'm hopeful that we'll be able to find a way to derive useful abundance indices from that. Also, you'll recall that there was some discussion maybe a year or a year and a half ago about trying to use a technology that's been developed by MIT, which is a low-frequency, broad-scale surveying methodology that I think actually has some promise. One of the problems with it is the concerns about interactions, negative interactions with marine mammals. But we are paying attention to the technology, and the lead investigator from MIT is working in collaboration with some Norwegian colleagues and looking at how it might be developed into a quantitative assessment tool. And one of our scientists is going to take part in the research cruise in Norway early next year to get some idea of its potential.
Other questions on this segment? Dave?
David Gaethel, Fishing Vessel, Ellen Diane. As part of this look at acoustic surveys, did they evaluate the effectiveness of acoustic surveys? In other words, in some parts of the country, people swear by them, and other places, they swear at them. Did they come to any conclusions about whether or not they are, you know, an effective tool?
Mr. Chairman, Dave, there was quite a lot of discussion about this. And one of the reviewers is actually someone who's worked with acoustics in a number of different areas for some time, so he's familiar with places where it's been successful and where it's been less successful. And my work in Alaska, I did quite a lot of work on acoustics relative to the pollock stocks there. So I think the answer is yes, there was some discussion. I think the outcome of that discussion really is that in a narrow stock assessment sense, acoustics can be very valuable, but it really depends on the stocks that you're trying to target. So if you've got a stock that is primarily off-bottom and primarily monospecific in distribution and meets certain other criteria, then it really is amenable to acoustic stock assessment. The further you move away from that definition, the harder it is to develop effective abundance indices, survey results to support assessments.
That's a good answer to me. I mean, I think that's what we've seen in the limited stuff that I've done with it. The other question I had is, did they examine any other alternative survey techniques? I mean, you mentioned the one I'm thinking of is this idea of perhaps the S-Masters just looked at with Yellowtail of towing a net with a camera on it and identifying the fish that go through the net, you know, open caught end. You could cover a lot more ground and get a much bigger sampled area. So I was wondering if they looked at that at all.
Mr. Chairman, Dave, the panel didn't look explicitly at that, but I suspect that that also is going to come out at the national level when we distill the findings from the regional reviews. The Alaska Center actually has a system that they're beginning to use for exactly the same kind of goal as the one that S-Master is working with. And there's some similar work going on in Europe. So I think the idea of being able to use video and open cut end sampling approaches is very powerful. And it's certainly something that as a center and together with our partners, we need to pay attention to and begin to implement as appropriate.
Okay, thank you. I mean, as an individual, I'd be very interested in seeing more information on that. I mean, I think it it appears to have a great deal of potential, but, you know, without seeing it broadly applied, it's going to be hard to evaluate its effectiveness.
Other questions on this section? See? Doug or Terry?
I had a question on Dave's question. When are we going to see the preliminary results, or are we going to see the preliminary results of that or anything? I guess the question for Bill on that. On that camera survey with...
Mr. Chair, I think that AskMaster has actually already produced some preliminary results that that Kevin Stokesbury shared with the MFI counselors or committee about a month or so ago. I think he's still working on formulating a report, but I don't want to put words in his mouth.
Other questions? Okay.
Okay, we're number five, improve cooperative research surveys and activities so that the data collected can be readily used in stock assessments. This is an issue that actually comes up quite frequently. There are many aspects of cooperative research, as you all know. Not all of the cooperative research that we do is intended to actually produce data that can be used directly in stock assessments. For example, work on gear technology, improved selectivity, and things like that have different goals. But there is work that goes on both in the fishery-dependent and the fishery-independent areas under cooperative research. Survey work and work on, for example, EVTRs that are both very powerful and hold considerable promise for bringing improved data quality and timeliness to stock assessments. The committee was very interested in the breadth and depth of the cooperative research activities in the region, and they homed in on some specific things that they really wanted us to develop, if you will. They were very interested in the work that we did earlier this year on the pilot flatfish survey, which we'd actually just completed before the review took place, so we were only able to provide some preliminary information. But the idea that we could use an industry vessel and work with the industry to develop the design for a survey that will improve the assessment of yellowtail flounder and other flatfishes is something that they supported. They were also interested in work that we had planned to do during the furlough this year on evaluating the survey gear catchability, working with the industry cooperatively, in which we are rescheduling for early next year. There was some concern about timeliness and quality of data that comes from cooperative research. It's an area that I think it's really important for us to focus on. When we engage in cooperative research with industry partners, it's often challenging for us to communicate the needs that we have and for us to resolve any differences perhaps in perspective about the goals of the cooperative research that we're doing. But again, I think we're making progress in that area, and it's an area that needs further investment. From the fishery-dependent area, the EVTR, a lot of the EVTR innovations in this region have been done through cooperation with the industry. Obviously, any kind of VTR implementation has to be done with direct collaboration with the industry. But our cooperative research people have worked very closely with some of the industry on implementing some new ideas with regards to EVTRs. The panel was pleased to hear about that. The panel was also interested in the study fleet, and they saw a lot of promise in the work of the study fleet, and encouraged us to work more closely on tuning the results of the study fleet or bringing the results from the study fleet into the stock assessments. That's the end of that one.
Questions for Bill? Okay. on the Section 6?
The 6 one I've already spoken to. It's invest more of the stock assessment staff's time on research to substantially improve stock assessment approaches and the scientific foundation for managerial activities. So As I've said, I expounded on that earlier on, so I'll pause to see if people have questions, but I think it's pretty clear.
Any questions? Ellen?
I am intimately involved with cooperative research, and I think it's one of the best ideas that's come out of the region in the past 3 decades. But there's different definitions of cooperative research, and around the world it's used very differently. And I think in the Northeast region it has been truly cooperative. Other regions use cooperative research. The scientists use the fishing vessels as platforms to do their science. And to me that's not cooperative research. That's renting a platform. It's really important that the information and the knowledge that the fishermen have is introduced into the study itself, and I think that that is happening, especially with the study fleet. And I'm really happy to hear that the Science Center is going to be looking at the study fleet information, because I think it's some of the best fishing-dependent data that you could possibly have. It's 100% of the fish that come on board and anything else that comes on board a vessel. And I think David's been doing it for over 8 years, and it's been very difficult to get that information into the stock assessment. And I really would hope that you are going to look at it very, very carefully, because that data is, to me, as a scientist, it's absolutely invaluable.
Thank you. I agree. And I think even though I also agree with you that when you rent a commercial vessel, when you charter a commercial vessel to do a survey, it doesn't have all of the benefits of cooperative research. I think it also does have some significant benefits, because the vessel is crewed by fishermen, and there's an opportunity for the people from the industry to understand better what the surveys do and how they work, and for the scientists on board to also learn from the industry. So it brings significant advantages, but it's not cooperative research in its broadest sense.
Other questions? Okay, we're on the grand finale here.
The grand finale, a topic that is dear to the council, and I think comes up associated with almost every issue that you debate, which has to do with observer coverage. Expand observer coverage to match the spatial and fishery data requirements needed for stock assessments. One of the reviewers from Canada was very familiar with the value of observer coverage to support a range of goals, including stock assessments. And we are too. And we certainly would love to have the resources to greatly increase observer coverage to better meet the spatial and fishery data requirements for stock assessments. What we're doing at the moment, of course, is we're using SBRM to prioritize sampling in support of assessments, and that's an ongoing challenge. We're working, as you know, with both of the councils to ensure that observer deployments are as productive as possible. And as you know, in particular, with the New England Council and the Mid-Atlantic, we're working on this observer initiative. I realize that there's still some issues associated with how best to move forward with that initiative, but the idea of being able to have a mechanism for allowing industry funding or partial industry funding of observers, I think is attractive to many, if not all of us, as well as a mechanism that's built into the concept here for looking in an objective way at how best to use our limited observer resources to meet the needs for both science and management. So that's an area that certainly the reviewers picked up on and encouraged us to address more vigorously, and that work is going on here today as we speak. Thank you.
Questions for Bill? Mike?
in the discussion of observer data and observer programs, was there any discussion of the potential use of data from observer programs for relative abundance purposes? That is, I mean, we're all well aware that in some places catch per unit effort is widely used as part of the assessment process. It is not used very much at all here, in part because of the fortune of having standardized surveys as an alternative. But with the large databases that have been developed from observer programs, there's an opportunity to use such data in relative abundance with a lot more understanding of the data and controls on the quality of the data and the analysis of it than would ever have been possible from traditional commercial data. And I'm not aware that any of that is being done, although it was discussed extensively and recommended by the SSC in terms of some of the assessment reviews that were done. I think it was COD, actually. So did this come up at all in the context of this review?
No, it didn't. It didn't come up as such, but I think your point is well taken. And actually, the comments that I made earlier about the need to build a better integrated fishery-dependent data system is tied to that as well, because being able to link all of the different kinds of information that's collected about the operation of a vessel and tie that directly to observed and unobserved vessels, so that we can post-stratify in an effective way, I think will be an important part of that. But I do think the idea of being able to better define perhaps fishing effort based on information that comes from observers could provide a powerful tool for abundance estimation.
Mike?
I'm not specifically as interested in it in defining effort, but literally there are thousands, you know, many times the number of observed tows with catches and detailed catch information from the observer program than there are from surveys. And while, you know, you sacrifice some elements in those tows, they represent a huge amount of data with a lot of the same sort of detailed background information that is used in surveys. And I think there is an opportunity to better analyze them or at least test to see what information is available, particularly for those species that aren't well monitored from the surveys.
PK?
Yeah, just to Mike's point, though, I'd be a little leery and be careful of using that data, because over the last few years, fishermen have gotten very good at avoiding fish. You know, that's all we've been doing the last 4 or 5 years. So even the abundance that the observers might have collected might be skewed.
One sort of hybrid approach to that, of course, is the study fleet. And a way that a study fleet has been used elsewhere in the world is to actually ask study fleet operators to sample standardized locations using standardized gear on an occasional basis to provide some improved index information that can support the stock assessment. But I think, you know, the whole idea of changes in behavior and the way that gear is tuned and used by different operators does make that, it makes it a much more complicated challenge.
Ella?
I have all sorts of comments and questions, but I'm going to try and keep them really short. I think that as part of all of these issues on observers are the point that if we're going to be using this data, which we are now, to enhance our stock assessments, that the data that they're collecting has to be really accurate. And in the past, when I've asked about this, if a fisherman has to go out of his way to actually request his data from the observer. They're supposed to offer the fisherman a card that the fisherman sends in requesting the data from that trip. They most of the time don't have it. That's an issue, another issue. But the point is that when the data does come and a fisherman takes the time to look at it and looks at it and finds mistakes, and puts, you know, calls and reports the discrepancies. I have been told that these discrepancies are noted on a separate piece of paper, but they are not changed. So my problem is that there are a lot of fish that some of the observers are, some of them are wonderful, some of them are less than wonderful at identifying fish or even identifying the gear type. Some go at it gung-ho, others spend most of the time sleeping on the vessel. It's not I'm not complaining about the observers themselves. I think that we have to make sure that if we are using that data for very specific reasons, we have to make sure that that data is very good. The other problem that I have seen, and every fisherman at the table will be able to agree to that, are that the scales that are used are very inefficient, and the way they're used is you cannot weigh fish at sea. So the only way to get a really good weight is to take whatever you're going to weigh back to the dock and actually weigh it on a certified scale. The scales aren't certified, and the fishermen are paying for those weights in dollars. So I'm hoping that this is going to be part of how you're going to be utilizing the observer program in a more efficient way, is to get more efficient and accurate data. Thank you.
Bill,
just a quick response. I share your concerns about data quality in general and the quality of data from observers. We have what I believe to be a rather rigorous review process, and I think some fraction of the data is eliminated and removed from the record because the data does not meet the standards during the post cruise debriefings. How effective that is really difficult to say. But I think it's also true that there's a feedback mechanism that is designed to pick up observers who are performing poorly and provide the necessary feedback, which might be additional training or which might be discontinuation of the certification. Again, I'm sure that that's not 100% effective, and I'm equally sure that we can figure out ways to improve that. And so your point is well taken. The issue of weighing and weighing at sea, I agree that's a difficult problem. In some cases, it's possible to use motion-compensated certified scales at sea. They're very expensive, they're difficult to move around, and they're particularly challenging to use on small vessels, so that may or may not be an appropriate solution. When you hold on to fish and bring them to shore, of course, they don't weigh the same as they did when you took them out of the net, so that's another place where there's a difficulty in accounting that we need to be mindful of.
All set, Ellen. Other questions for Bill? You have more for us?
I'll come back in about a year's time with some more, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you very much for your report and update. Oh, sorry, Mike.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if we were just talking about observers or broadly on the whole process. If I could, I'd make a couple of comments on the whole process, just very briefly. First, I think it's a very positive step. It's been a long time since the center conducted really a meaningful program review process. In fact, I was probably responsible for saying we just don't have time for this anymore, you know, some 15 years ago. And, you know, I guess at the time that I did that, I thought it was the necessary thing to do. Whether I was right or wrong or doesn't matter at this point, I think it's very positive that Bill and the agency overall is initiating a regular program review process like this. And it is work, and it will withdraw, will take away resources that might have been doing the next periwinkle assessment update or whatever it is. But in the long term, it'll pay benefits that we'll all that'll be good for all of us. In terms of just a couple of quick comments about process, I noticed looking at the agenda that there wasn't any identified time where stakeholders got to voice their views. I assume they were there. I know they were there, and they got to comment along the way. But I think in the future one might consider actually having a formal segment of the agenda that allows us stakeholders to weigh in and give their views and concerns and so on. In fact, in some of these sort of processes I've been involved in, there are even sessions where the reviewers meet in private with stakeholders who want to express their concerns. So that's just something for you to consider in the future. The other observation I'd make about process is you're dealing with individual reports. At least that's what's on the website. And I assume that's, again, a FACA issue. I think these sort of program reviews are much more constructive and useful if you can develop a more coherent consensus report of a group of reviewers rather than individual reports. And when this process was first discussed and designed by the review that I was involved in, by one with Brian, we envisioned this being under the umbrella of the NOAA Science Advisory Board, or whatever it's called nowadays, which is FACA-approved and has set up subcommittees that operate under that FACA umbrella. So this is something else that the agency may want to pursue in terms of future reviews to deal with the FACA issue, because I do think that individual reports are useful in some ways, but a consensus report is just so much easier to work with and eliminate some of the inconsistencies and even contradictions. Thank you.
Bill, just respond. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate your feedback. We actually did have a short time slot every day for public comment and feedback, although we didn't get very much, and I think we have to do a better job of encouraging participation the next time around. I do agree with your point about consensus reports from the committee, and I would like to find a way to do that. It turned out in this case, having of course sat through the review, that the reports were similar and complementary in a way that I think really met our needs. But again, I think your point is well taken in that regard, and it's something that we should pursue if we possibly can.
Are there any further questions, comments? Seeing none, thank you, Bill, and for the report and for all the work you and your staff have been doing. Very informative, and I look forward to your next report. In a year, or sooner, I hope. Going to do a quick time check here as we are working our way through other business. I know of one more agenda item. Or how many folks have business for other business?
I just one comment.
Okay, so does everybody want to turbo through this? Okay, go ahead, Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Karen, if you don't mind putting that up. Great, thank you. This was brought to my attention recently by Bonnie. This map shows the possible siting locations for a U.S. Navy EPA dredge material dumping site. And currently a firm in Manchester, New Hampshire called Tetra Tech, under the lead of Dina Anderson, is calling for fishermen to fill out surveys showing their uses of these waters. In terms of what the council is concerned about, that little triangle off to the east off of Block Island, it falls into statistical areas 611 and 539. I think it's really important for us to be mindful that this is going on. Granted, most of the area under consideration is in state waters, but we do have some areas that fall under our jurisdictions, and I think it would be prudent for us to weigh in on this. Another thing that concerns me is if you count those little boxes, there are actually 11 former dredge material dumping sites that are no longer active, and two that are currently active. So there seems to be a lot of activity of filling up Long Island Sound with dredge material. I just wanted to bring this to the council's attention, and I've got one simple motion to make. Karen, if you could put that up. And again, Bonnie's got more information about this, but I think it's incumbent for us I'd like to request that the chairman send a letter I wouldn't say to the service, but to Tetra Tech or the, I'm not sure who the right person would be to make this, provide this information to. So I'm happy to, for friendly wordsmithing on this. Send a letter identifying the fisheries under the council management and their economic significance possibly affected by the proposed dredge material disposal sites in statistical areas 611 and 539, if I can add that on there. If I can get a second, I can provide justification.
Is there a second? Second by Dave Preble.
Thank you. right now, this is just being, it's in consideration, but I think, and right now it seems to me that Tetra Tech is targeting the lobster industry that is in this area, but we do have vessels operating in those areas from both Connecticut, Rhode Island, New York, New Jersey, maybe even Massachusetts. I'll defer to those folks from New Jersey on that one. And I think we need to weigh in on this and let folks know that this is not just a lobster issue, but there are federally managed fisheries in pursued in this area, and I think we would be remiss not to address this. So I think we just need to weigh in quickly and get our voices heard.
Bonnie, could you provide a little bit more context and advise who this letter should go to? Should the motion pass?
Hi, thanks, and thanks to Matt for bringing this up. I received a communication with Dean Anderson from Tetra Tech, who is a biologist who's working, I think, on a draft SEIS for the EPA about proposed future spoil sites. So I've been sending blasts and emails to every rec and commercial person I know that would have some effect. I've sent a letter to the council directly, to New York, to Rhode Island reps, to Connecticut reps, both the ASMFC and the Mid-Atlantic Council, also just because of the fact. I know in the past I've heard from fishermen when they did a former dredge spoil site that it really messed up some of the fisheries in that area, so just obviously not recreate the same mistakes in the future. So I thought you wanted to have knowledge of that. And I did send the electronic format for all of that to you, Terry, and to Pat, and to Tom, so that anyone on the council can access it that way.
So clarification, the letter should go to Tetra Tech?
Yes, Dean Anderson at Tetra Tech, I believe, is the person. There is contact information in the email also at the very bottom of it, so you can contact her and find out if there's someone farther up the food chain it should go to.
Okay, and Karen, Dave Preble, second of the motion. Dave.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the past, we've handled this kind of thing, and what happens is if this is within the jurisdictional area of the New England Fishery Management Council, then it would be referred to Habitat for determination if the area in question is EFH for any fish within the four life stages. And a letter would be forwarded on that basis. I think, I'm not sure, but I think Michelle has a template for that.
Are there any other comments? Seeing none. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Any opposed? And any abstentions? So the motion carries 16-0-0. You're on a roll, Matt. Is there any other business for the council today before we go to John? John.
So I just have a comment. It relates to the communication earlier on the open areas that the council voted to send. And I'd earlier been conversing with a reporter from the Gloucester Times, and I mentioned that while he didn't write the editorial that you may have seen in today's paper in the Gloucester Times, that editorial referred to the council as an arm of NOAA. And I said, oh, you should tell the person who writes the editorial that that's really not accurate. And there are probably some people in the council who would be offended if they read that. That's the last thing the council is an arm of NOAA. And they should know better than to refer to the council, highly independent people, as an arm of NOAA. And he said he would take that message for all the good it will do. But at any rate, in the spirit of improved communication, as long as we're in the letter writing business, and having had the opportunity to count to 10 several times, during debate on that communication, it was suggested by a member, unfortunately not here right now, that either I or the service was toying with the industry. Now, if I thought that was just about me, I might let that roll off my back, because I've developed a thick skin over the years. Might let that roll off my back. Probably wouldn't. But, I thought, it's not just about me. It's about everyone I work with. And the idea that we approach our work as toying with the industry, I just find profoundly offensive. Profoundly offensive. And so I can't let that go without response. And I know it may just be a slip of the tongue or an inappropriate use of the word and may not be felt by anyone else, but I just, in the interest of anyone thinking that my silence means that I accept that on my behalf, or more importantly, on behalf of the people that work with me, I have to say that that word is offensive. We do not toy at our jobs. We take our jobs very seriously. As we said about, feeling the uncomfort of this situation, toying is the last thing we think about. This is very serious. And we may and do disagree on certain things, on certain positions. We agree on some things, we disagree on some things. On closed areas, you take a position on one thing, and, we get 90,000, it wasn't 80,000, it was 90,000 letters on another. Someone may want to cavalierly dismiss those 90,000 opinions, okay, but they're 90,000 opinions on a different side of the issue. All right, so they're differences of opinion. If you want to write a letter that some of you say, well, it has no effect, is that toying? I don't know. If someone wants to congratulate us on the position that we take and then speaks out against that position, is that toying? I don't know. But we're not toying. We may disagree, but we're not toying. And I don't think you are either, whether we agree or disagree. And I know with every single one of you, we've agreed with you sometimes and disagreed sometimes, but I know you're not toying at your work, and I would expect you to feel the same about us. We don't toy at this. We take it very, very seriously. I want to make that very clear. And the other thing I want to make very clear, because sometimes it feels like, every day is take a free shot at NOAA Fisheries Day. That everyone has limited resources except for NOAA Fisheries. But we have limited resources too. So, some letter's going to go up to the secretary and then it's going to come down the chain, and we're going to spend time talking about justifying past actions. with our limited resources. And I told you we were going to spend time talking about how to solve this problem about the future. But instead, we're going to spend time talking about justifying past actions. Instead of talking about how to solve the problem in the future, we're going to talk about why did we do it in the past. I'd rather talk about how to solve it in the future, but instead we're going to talk about why do we do it in the past. I'd rather do that, solve it in the future, but instead we're going to talk about why do we do it in the past. That's what happens with limited resources. You make choices. We all have to do that. The council has to do that. The center has to do that. We all, because we're all living in limited resources. And the state directors know that better than we do, because you're all living with that as well. Anyway, I just wanted to let you know, in the spirit of honest communication, how we feel, how I feel on behalf of the people I work for, how we approach our work. Okay? I do enjoy working with you as we wrestle these problems to the ground. And I know we're going to have times where we agree on things, and we're going to have times we disagree. But it's serious business that we bring to the table. We don't toy with it. Thank you. Thank you for indulging me, Mr. Chair.
David.
Yeah, I wondered if you were going to respond to that particular point, and you did, and I think your response is quite justified. And we appreciate the fact that the service, regional office in particular, under your leadership, really has done a lot, and that you do take it very seriously, the problems of the groundfish fishery very seriously. I'll only hope that, again, regarding the instead point that you made, that you do obviously deal with the letter that will fall down the stairs to your office, but at the same time you'll also follow through with your very sensible approach that you suggested before, that is to try to move this forward, work with the sectors, and to see if indeed there is something that can be done, a letter of authorization, experimental fishery, whatever, to deal with access to the closed area. So I personally appreciate your reaction, John, and I think it's safe to say that I certainly reflect the position or the attitude of council members, that we have a lot to be thankful for in terms of the efforts your agency puts in on behalf of the resource and, of course, the industry.
Mm-hmm. Terry.
Yeah, I mean, I do appreciate what you guys do, John, and you know that. I've talked to you before, and I meant that letter, I meant that motion, because I made the motion, so I'm going to take responsibility for it, to just what I said at the end of my comments. I think that it's our responsibility to show the people who are making budgets in Washington, D.C. that, you know, we need some help up here. And I think that's the way to do it. I mean, you guys can only reiterate that so many times to your boss, that we need more money, we need more money. Well, with a disaster declaration, I think it's our responsibility to do that. So that was what my intention was for that motion. I wasn't criticizing you personally or your organization. I was simply going to point out the facts that we're still in trouble up here, and we're sinking fast. So,
are there any final comments? Well, I'll make one. Thanks, John, for your candid remarks. I think it's been a healthy dialogue. I think we really are mostly on the same page, despite the fact we're all going to disagree from time to time. So I appreciate you stating your piece. With that said, this meeting is adjourned for the day. We will begin tomorrow morning at 8:30 for a full day habitat.